Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, an economist explains the Fed's big interest rate hike earlier today and the stock market's downturn in the last couple of weeks and what it means for you. First, our next guest is a Milwaukee bookfluencer. That's an influencer who writes about books. She shares her love of reading on the Instagram account Always Black, which she runs for Penguin Random House. Cree Miles celebrates Black literature, from classics like Toni Morrison and James Baldwin to new authors like Mateo Ascarapore. She hosts weekly Drop Everything and Read sessions with her followers, invites people to answer prompts like poorly explain your favorite book, and asks for the book equivalents of her favorite songs. And each week she shares a new word she grabbed from a book that she's reading and then writes a song about it. Here she is rapping about the word clandestine, which she got from the novel Cherish Farah by Bethany C. Morrow.
I just want to do a little quick artistic note and let y'all know that the word is clandestine. I will be pronouncing it a little differently throughout the song, but it's clandestine. I don't want y'all out here looking wild. Clandestine, done secretly, done privately, done covertly. You feel me? Clandestine. All right, let's go. C-L-A-N-D-E-S-T-I-N-E, done secretly, clandestine. When you do it, can't nobody know about it. It's clandestine. You should unpack how you really feel about it. Clandestine. I don't have really.
All right, we're going to have some fun with books, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite book written by a Black author or a favorite Black author? Are you reading anything good right now? What is on your list of books to read this summer? What kind of things do you look for good summertime reading? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Cree Miles is the curator of Penguin Random House's Instagram account, Always Black. She's also the creator of the Black Like We Never Left book club. Miles has been nominated for a Webby and won a Shorty Award, which honors work on the internet. Cree, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so, happily embarrassed that you played that word of the week.
I love to happily embarrass people. It's what the show is all about, really. Can you tell us a little bit, if we go and check out Always Black on Instagram, what are we going to find there?
So, as you mentioned, I do host, weekly sessions dedicated to reading time for adults, and I'm constantly promoting the new books by Black authors that are coming out of Penguin Random House, and then just the niche stuff of the Black community, the Black reading community. I just put up a reel about it was a 9-second review of Beloved, and if you haven't read the book, you don't get it, but if you read the book, you get it, and you thought it was hilarious. So that type of stuff, you know.
Part of what's fun about this is, you know, we think of reading as a solitary activity, unless maybe you join a book club. It seems like you're building a community of people who love reading.
Yeah, I think that was really important to me, because, you know, my whole book influencer journey started after I read Bluest Eye and just needed people to talk about it with. And so now that there is just a community of dedicated people who love talking about books, I even through my travels, when I've had to link up with an influencer or an author and we go out for dinner, we literally just talk about books for 2 hours. And just to have a whole community of people where that's all you do is it's super fun.
You know, sometimes I think, you know, we might love kids' books when we're kids, and we grow out of it, or we go in stages of reading where we fall away from it as grownups. Can you help inspire, maybe rekindle that love of reading for us grownups?
Reading is so important to me, and I was just tweeting about this. I just feel like we're just in a pandemic of anti-intellectualism, and I think a lot of people think if you're only reading things of substance, if you're reading heavy nonfiction or nonfiction about real estate or et cetera, et cetera. But I think grownups especially forget that we live our lives in stories. And so to have a greater expanse of stories to pull from makes your brain stronger. So it makes you think better. I really believe that.
We're talking to Cree Miles, curator of the Instagram account Always Black. She, as you hear, is encouraging us to read, and she promotes Black authors and Black literature in particular. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. If you want a recommendation, if you have a recommendation, 800-642-1234. According to the numbers, the publishing industry skews white. At Penguin Random House, where you're doing this Instagram account, 76% of the books they published between 2019 and 2021 by white authors. Can you talk about your goals to promote specifically Black authors, past and present?
Sure. I mean, I think when I can speak for myself, when I started this journey, I was fairly confident that like the Black canon had already been written. And now that I'm deep up to my neck in this work, I realize that it's being written real time right now. And there are like phenomenal authors creating amazing work that everybody should know about. And I think the more Black authors that we get on shelves, it'll be even more impactful.
You sent us a list of some recommendations for the summer, and you've already spoiled one of them, Toni Morrison, The Bluest Eye. And this is, as you said, a book that really got you started down this path. Why was this such a game changer for you?
It really is what people say about, like, you don't, like, a lot of times I know when I've talked to Black people, Black women, LGBTQIA folks, the things that we're given in school, you don't necessarily see yourself. And so you think the things that you experience are these really specific things that no one else is going through, which is why, like, you don't even have language for the stuff. But after I read Bluest Eye, was the first time where I was like, okay, I'm not crazy. All of the things that I know I was experiencing was real. And it was even more sobering that the book, like, cause I read this book like 6 years ago, right? And it came out like in 1970, I think. So like the fact that it's still so relevant is just it makes your experience more universal and less lonely. I think that's why it's important.
One of your missions in life, as I understand it, is to get people who don't think they're going to like Toni Morrison to try some Toni Morrison. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, you know, my whole thing is like when people are listening to a phenomenal singer, like you're like, I can't listen to Freddie Mercury. He's too good. I can't listen. And it's like, I think people say that about the best writers too. And it's, yes, you can, just because they're really good. Part of the reason they're really good at their craft is because they make the complicated thing accessible. So you can totally enjoy Toni Morrison. You might have to slow down. You might have to engage you might have to engage your brain in a way that you usually don't, but that doesn't mean that you can't read and enjoy the book.
We heard from Kim on the Ideas Network Facebook page. It's Lot by Brian Washington was the first time I read a book by an African-American author and thought, this book was clearly not written for me as a Midwestern white person. Kim goes on, that sort of blew my mind in a good way. I'm sure I'm late to the game in realizing this, but it left me wondering how many authors of color or other cultures have knowingly or unconsciously changed the way they write in order to meet white culture expectations. Kim concludes, definitely was a worthwhile read for me in so many ways. Interesting comment, Cree. What do you think?
I mean, most authors that I read, like the goal is to not center the white gaze. That's all Toni Morrison talked about when she was writing, and she sometimes got chastised about it. Like, when are you going to stop writing about Black things? But I do think part of the point of diversifying our shelves is to show that no matter who the story is centering, a lot of human experiences are universal. So it doesn't have to be a white man for all of us to see ourselves. Everybody should also be able to see themselves in a little Black girl or a little Latina boy, because that is how we build empathy.
Let's get back to some of your summer reading suggestions. I'll let you go where you want. You've got some older ones on your list and some brand new stuff. Hit us with a couple.
Okay, so Real Life by Brandon Taylor, I read it a year late, and I know that he's writing a new book right now because I stalk all his socials and he turned in the manuscript. But he's wonderful, especially for this crowd, because the story actually takes place in a fictional collegiate town that is exemplified off of the University of Wisconsin, because he studied I think it was chemistry there until he got accepted into the Iowa's Writers Workshop. And so that's where he became a writer. And it takes place. It's my favorite type of novel. It's a campus novel. It takes place during one weekend. It centers a queer Black man. It's so masterful. Like, I can't even. And then the other one that I mentioned, the other backlist that I mentioned, On Beauty by Zadie Smith, is the book that I always recommend when people say that they want to read more, but they don't know where to start. Again, as I said, I am a sucker for a campus novel. This is also a campus novel. Zadie Smith is brilliant. I don't have like another word for it, because she gives us this like realistic fiction, campus novel, domestic fiction, but it's still like highbrow. So like, it's just all about all of these interpersonal relationships and people working through the different family dynamics. She's really masterful at centering multiracial families. So she does that in On Beauty as well. And so the new releases that I mentioned, Shine Bright by Danielle Smith, it's four books behind me and I'm still like obsessed. It's her very intimate portrait of Black women in pop. Danielle is a like prominent music journalist. She was the editor-in-chief of Vibe. She worked at Billboard. She interviewed Whitney Houston. She's interviewed Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey, all of them. Oh my gosh, excuse my dog.
That's okay. We love dogs on the show.
But she talks about, she goes into deep detail about like what it takes to create a pop hit, because the formula isn't as simple as a great song and a great voice. It like, there's kissing babies. There's a lot of politics behind immortalizing a song. And then she just talks about the influence that Black women have had on the pop industry, and about arguments about why pop has kind of sometimes been considered not the most sophisticated genre, even though it should be up there with the rest of them. I was obsessed. And then she weaves in her personal story. She grew up in Oakland. She went to a school of the arts. Like, it's really dope. Civil Rights Queen by Tamiko Brown Nagin. It centers Constance Baker Motley, who was the civil rights attorney in the 60s, who argued a lot of the cases that desegregated the higher institutions of learning in the South, like Ole Miss and University of Alabama, University of Georgia. And I do not understand why she is not a household name. So I'm pushing it out everywhere, because Tamiko is a professor at Harvard and has done extensive research on Constance. And I learned so much. Like, I learned things that I just feel like we should all know. So that's why I'm passing on the book. It's hefty. It's a hefty nonfiction, but it's totally worth it.
We're talking to Milwaukee. We'll pick up just a minute. We're talking to Milwaukee-based bookfluencer Cree Miles about her Instagram account, Always Black, which celebrates a Black literature and, as we're hearing, nonfiction as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a book or an author to share, something you want to ask about. What makes a good summertime read for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or join the conversation on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about Black literature with Cree Miles from Milwaukee. She's the curator of Penguin Random House's Instagram account called Always Black. She's sharing recommendations with us, and you can too if you'd like, at 800-642-1234. We want to hear about books you love from Black authors, books you've maybe learned from or that made an impression on you. Or you can get a recommendation at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Hearing from more of you online than in person here, Tim on Facebook writes, suggests Homegoing by Ya Jossi. And Pete writes, Poppy, the autobiography by, baseball player David Ortiz. Cree, you were giving us some recommendations. Pick up where you left off.
First, I have to shout out Ya Jossi. True. I haven't read Homegoing, but I read her second one, Transcend the Kingdom, and 10 out of 10. She's brilliant. The last thing that was on my recommendation list was the only book that I haven't read on this list, but I know that it's going to be good because I've read every other book by the author. Okweke Emezi, You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty. They write everything, and this was their first romance novel. And so the fact that they write like highbrow literary books, and then also like, I mean, the romance novel is getting a lot of buzz, so I think if there's any, like, everyone needs to pick that up. I haven't read it yet because it's not out of Penguin Random House, and I've kind of had to do all of that, but I'm picking it up at the end of this week. I'm super excited about it.
Now, I gotta ask you, I read a lot for work, to prepare for interviews, and I read a lot for fun on my own time. Does it, since your job in part now is reading, does it make it less fun, or is it still enjoyable for you?
It's still amazing. You know, it is like when I had to read Civil Rights Queen, I felt like I was in school for a little bit. Like it's this really thick nonfiction book. But then all of the things that I got out of the book, it was totally worth it. And then the other part is like this last week I was reading a romance novel. So like I get paid to do that. So it's super, it's all rewarding.
Excellent. Now, speaking of genres, say a particular radio host was a big science fiction and fantasy fan. Do you have any recommendations? So like, this is not controversial. N.K. Jemisin, I mean, she's won massive amounts of
Oh.
awards in the genre. I'll read her
Yeah.
laundry list if she publishes it. You could talk about N.K. Jemisin or anybody else you might recommend.
Okay, first, I want to know what is your favorite book by N.K. Jemisin?
Okay. So the Broken Earth trilogy there, a little heavier. I liked a lot. That's like more serious. 100,000 Kingdoms. I mean, it's still like kind of dark in some ways. I had a lot more fun with that one. So maybe
Yeah.
depending on my mood, you know.
You know, I've only read fifth season and I was obsessed and but I just haven't had a chance to go back.
Oh.
And I know that if you love sci-fi, then you know that N.K. Jemisin ran be is running because Octavia Butler walked. But I feel like the one that a lot of people don't know about is Ursula K. Le Guin. And you have like my entry point for her always is the word for world is forest. And she's not a black author, she's a white woman. She recently passed. She was elderly, I think in like 2020 or 2019. But the word for world is forest is a really good entry point to me for her because it's short, but she is masterful. Like I love, she got me out of my slump when I was in college. I picked up the
Cool.
discipline by her and was obsessed.
Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula Le Guin was, it's like, I mean, again, not
Oh, yes.
controversial. It's on one of my all-time favorite lists as a science
Of
fiction fan too.
course. Of course.
Cool. I got to join your book clubs and stuff. Seems like we're on the same page on some of this. So, Craig,
Yeah.
you mentioned, you know, sometimes with any sort of literary canon, whatever we're talking about, we could think, oh, it's the stuff that was written back then. But you said earlier the black literary canon is still, you know, it's a living thing. Could you talk about
Yeah.
who you see kind of on the cutting edge of that?
Yeah, so one person who I'm always like, this is a hill I die on, that's not even like a controversial hill, is Robert Jones Jr. His debut novel, The Prophets, was shortlisted for the National Book Award, and it centers a queer love story that takes place in the antebellum South between two enslaved men in Mississippi. And when I talked to him about the book, I was like, why? And he said, because the canon needed it. So I wrote it. And it took him like 15 years to write it,
Wow.
but it's a masterpiece. So that one for sure. And like anything by Ekwueke Emezi. And of course, Ta-Nehisi Coates. And of course, Zadie Smith. Like I could, you know, I could go on and on and on.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ed is with us in Duluth. Hi, Ed.
Hello. Hello, Cree.
Hi,
And
Ed.
thank you. Thanks for taking the call. Am I supposed to say something
Yeah,
now?
what did you want to bring up, Ed?
Well, when she was talking about her reading black authors, I think one of the motivations for a lot of people is in line with lifestyles of the rich and famous, in the sense that we're interested, or the public seems to be interested, in people who are different from ourselves. And, you know, having lived abroad also and stuff, understanding black culture and the experience, you know, reading books that really give you an insight into that is really invaluable, I think, for people who are like me, white, middle class.
And Ed, do you
But
have specific authors you'd point toward?
James Baldwin, both his fiction and nonfiction, The Fire Next Time, Giovanni's Room, you know, there was a couple others. And then Langston Hughes is a poet. I like writing poetry. And Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man just knocked me off my feet.
Ed, thanks a lot for calling in. Cree, jump in on any of those.
Ed, honestly, I'm just I love my job because I get to do things like this and talk to people like you, Ed, a white man in Duluth who is here celebrating James Baldwin. That literally, I was smiling ear to ear listening to you talk. That's wonderful.
Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that, Ed. Okay, what is on your stack right now, Cree? What is in arm's reach and you're going to read it maybe starting this week or weekend?
Okay, so it's super. I do a weekly talk with authors on Always Black, and I'm off for the next 2 weeks, so I get to read whatever I want. Ooh. And so I'm running to You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty by Akweke Emezi. And I think I'm going to start there. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that I feel like pressing that I need to get to? That's really the top of the priority list for me. Oh my goodness. I haven't read any Toni Morrison this year, and I try to read at least one novel a year. So I might tackle Paradise, maybe.
And you, I got to ask, are you a rereader? Every once in a while, I'll reread something. I usually don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I wasn't until I did my first readathon, and it was the Toni Morrison readathon. So I reread Beloved. And I was like, wow, I should definitely reread this more often. I'm thinking, because I would eventually like to write more. And so I think that I'm going to just like systematically reread my favorites, like just like reread Bluest Eye over and over again. I think I'm going to do something like that.
Excellent. Cree, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Cree Miles is the curator of Penguin Random House's Instagram account, Always Black, which has won a Shorty Award and been nominated for a Webby. She joined us. She's from Milwaukee, by the way. I should re-mention that. She joined us to talk about Black literature. Lots of recommendations there. You can keep sharing yours over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up after the news, an economist explains Monday's big market drop, what it means to the economy and for you, plus today's news about a substantial increase in the interest rate coming from the Federal Reserve. The goal, try to slow down inflation. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to a Wisconsin economist about the recent dip in the stock market, what's behind it, and what it can tell us about the rest of the economy. First, graduation season is in full swing across Wisconsin. We asked graduates of all ages about their visions for the future. Today, we're sharing the hopes of a few college grads around the state.
My name is Mengcha Mua, and today I'm graduating from UW-Eau Claire. It feels very good to be, you know, coming out of it and, you know, doing this accomplishment and being able to walk on stage and be with all my other peers, as well as being without masks and being able to see everyone's happy faces. So after college, I will be going to the University of Washington in Seattle to pursue a master's degree in cinema studies. For me, the future looks like pursuing what you're happy and passionate about. I think we kind of live in a world where people are kind of going the easy route instead of pursuing what they really want to pursue. And pursuing my graduate degree in cinema studies, I'm hopefully paving a path for younger people to also pursue their passions and things that they feel happy about.
My name is Giselle Manette. I am a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Ojibwe. I'm 23 years old, and I am graduating from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Short term, my goal is to hang out. College was really hard. Wisconsin is a difficult school, so I really want to just read some good books and do kind of monotonous things for a while until I challenge myself again. I'm really interested in health and creating ways to bring in healthy food systems to Native communities. I really hope for a world where all of my brown and black relatives can achieve the levels of health, wealth, and well-being that they desire. I dream of a world that is free of disparity, where people can exist as themselves in the way that they would like to, without judgment and hatred and unjust regulation of their being and their bodies and their existence.
My name's William Kunkel. I'm graduating from UW-Stout with a bachelor's in mechanical engineering. Then after that, I will be pursuing a PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I had a lot of difficulty with school early on in elementary school and middle school, as I'm dyslexic. So like eventually I decided school wasn't for me. When you go into higher education, especially pursuing like a PhD and even in the undergraduate level in college, it's all focused on applications. And I've never had trouble understanding concepts. It's just been the memorization part. My vision is really to work on what I like to think of as tomorrow's problems. The technology that our society can develop is largely dependent on the materials available to us and the manufacturing processes that we have available. So what I'm going to be working on is basically making 3D printing of metals better. So that's how I feel I can impact society by enabling new technologies.
My name is Priyank. I graduated today with a bachelor's in business finance. Well, I'll be starting to work at a Kohler company in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and starting as a financial analyst, which I look forward to. And today was a great accomplishment, but it's just one step into the direction for the future that waits for me. Hopefully, I can leave a good legacy behind me when I'm retiring at age of 60. And, you know, just make an impact into people's lives. Don't be afraid to try new things. Don't be afraid to make a big move. Like Steve Jobs said, stay hungry, strive for greatness.
A big congratulations to all the graduates around the state. You can read more about the people we spoke to at WPR.org. Now, the Federal Reserve today announced the biggest interest rate hike since 1994. It's part of a response to ongoing higher than usual inflation levels, which helped cause a big drop in the stock market on Monday. Monday's drop pushed the S&P 500 into a bear market, meaning it's 20% or more lower than the most recent high. We're talking now about the state of the stock market, inflation, and the Fed's interest rate hike, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the movements of the stock market recently? Do you think about what the stock market is doing in general? Does it have an impact on you? And the Federal Reserve rate hike, do you think it's a good move? How is inflation affecting you in your day-to-day life? Are you having to change what you do because of it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Kevin Barr is chief analyst and professor with the Center for Business and Economic Insight at the UW-Stevens Point School of Business and Economics. Kevin, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob, thank you very much. Nice to be back.
Let's start with this newest news, this Federal Reserve interest rate hike. I think people knew they were going to do something. What does this mean, the hike that they ended up doing, 0.75 point?
Okay, so I think there's a couple of things behind this. Certainly, it is a fairly large increase, the 75 basis point increase. I think the financial markets were hoping that the Fed would take a sort of relatively large increase as opposed to a smaller increase. And I think you can see that by looking at the financial market response today, which is pretty much a strong increase in stock prices, pretty much across the board of about 2%. But all that being said, I think you also have to look at the context. Although this was a relatively historical large one-time increase, that is the 75 basis points, that still only puts the Fed funds rate, their target short-term rate, at between 1.5 and 1.75. So it's basically going to bring that rate back to where it was in 2019. So when we've had this historically low level of interest rates, really unrealistically low interest rates. So the Fed is going to bring the interest rates probably back up to a targeted rate of about, they're projecting of about 3.4% by the end of this year, 3.8% by the end of next year. So they're going to bring those rates back to where they were historically back in the 1990s and after the turn of the century, pretty much, before you had these sort of traumatic economic events of COVID-19, and then before that, the financial crisis.
And the Fed wants to bring up the interest rates of inflation. I've asked you this before. Connect the dots. Why does moving this one lever theoretically lead to lower inflation?
Okay, so I think one of the things that's really kind of different right now, you've got, I think, three levers to this inflation. And the Fed can pretty much control one of the three. So the Federal Reserve tries to increase interest rates to lower consumer demand. We've had a very strong economy, a very hot job market. Employment levels have pretty much returned to where they were before the pandemic. The problem is demand's come back, but supply hasn't come back. The Federal Reserve really can't control supply chains. And the other whammy with this is basically energy prices. The Federal Reserve cannot control commodity prices. So what they're trying to do, what they can to temper the consumer demand side of the cause of the of inflation. But you got other, but you have another two big factors out there: the supply chain and energy prices that the Federal Reserve really can't do anything about.
Finally, we'll get to the thing that we originally called you about, the big market drop on Monday. You know, news keeps happening. The market drop on Monday, that came after the market had gone down. There's this big drop on Monday. Things seem to have smoothed out a little bit. What is going on in the stock market there?
Okay, anytime there's a lot of uncertainty, and right now you have a lot of uncertainty in the stock market, you're going to get a lot of swings, and you might even call it overreaction. I mean, yesterday you had the big drop. Today you have kind of really kind of a big comeback, but you've got uncertainty over inflation. You have uncertainty over energy prices. You have some uncertainty over supply chain issues. I think yesterday you also had some uncertainty over interest rates. I mean, that's kind of gone away a little bit, at least short term, based on what the Federal Reserve did today. So anytime you have a lot of uncertainty, typically, it's not a good thing for the market, and you'll see prices go down. And when some of that uncertainty goes away, like you did today, and the market viewed what the Federal Reserve did, I think largely favorably, and that's why stock prices pretty much went up.
I like to, when I look at things like this, I like to pull back the time scale some. And in January, at the beginning of this year, we had a record high in the Dow. It had, you know, the drop at the beginning of the pandemic. Steady yeah. climb, record all-time high, 36,000 something at the beginning of the year. Is the story that, oh no, the stock market's plummeting, or is it that was unrealistically high back then, given what's going on in the world?
I think you bring up two very good points. I think the stock market was kind of unrealistically high, and I'll talk about that maybe a little bit more in detail coming up here. But I think in addition to the stock market being unrealistically high, if you go back and you went to January, you've got Putin invading the Ukraine. Oil prices, the per barrel price of oil, basically went from $70 in December to near $120 recently. You've had gas prices go up as oil prices have gone up. Gas prices are up about $1.50 this year. I don't think that was really anticipated back in December that you're going to have that kind of a swing in energy prices. And I think for the most part, I think many companies have been surprised by the prolonged supply chain disruptions that they faced. In addition to that, anytime COVID kind of pops up, be it in the United States or in other countries like China, if there's a lockdown in China, that affects supply chains, that affects imports. And it's not only the finished products that would come into the United States, but it's basically inputs that are needed to make other products here in the United States. So I think it's a combination of factors.
Kevin Barr is with us, chief analyst and professor with the Center for Business and Economic Insight at UW-Stevens Point's School of Business and Economics. He's talking to us about Monday's market drop, the interest rate increase from earlier today, and inflation, what it all means for the economy as a whole. You can join in at 800-642-1234. A lot of moving parts here. Do you have thoughts, maybe solutions that you'd like to make the case for some of these problems? Do you have questions about what the heck is going on? And do you personally feel a hit when the stock market drops to your retirement plans, say? Are you feeling the impact of inflation? Is it changing the way you plan, purchase, travel? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with UW-Stevens Point economics professor Kevin Barr, looking at Monday's stock market drop, the Federal Reserve rate increase today, what it all means for the economy and for you. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Chris is with us in Port Wing. Chris, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Chris?
Well, thanks for this important discussion. You know, as a person who's been in investing for retirement for over 20 years in the market, we've been watching what's going on and expecting a market correction, a significant correction, because it's been very, very high. I've been waiting for a correction for 4.5 years. Even if none of these other factors weighed in, I would expect the market to go down significantly. The other thing is we've got to get used to high gas prices. We have to figure out how to price fossil fuels out of the market, and we have to do it without harming poor people. Right now, the market just comes down like a ton of bricks on anybody who doesn't make $50,000 a year or more, and we can figure out how to do this. We need to raise taxes on gas and spend those taxes on compensating people who don't make enough money to afford it. And we need to wean ourselves off these fossil fuels in a way that enhances the economy rather than detracts from it.
Chris, thanks for the call. A couple big points there, Kevin. And actually, he brought up something that I put a pin in earlier, the idea that, as Chris says, artificially high markets, he's been waiting for a correction. You said you might have more to say about that.
I think you brought up two excellent points. Mm-hmm. First of all, as far as the market, the S&P 500, this is kind of your benchmark for large company stocks. Long run average over the last 75 years, the S&P is up typically about 10 and 11% a year. In 2019, it was up nearly 29%, 2020, 16%, 2021, 27%. Those numbers aren't sustainable. The NASDAQ, the technology index, that was just nuts. That was up 35% in 2019, 43% in 2020, 21% in 2021. That's not sustainable. If you look at the U.S. financial markets compared to the world financial markets, the U.S. financial markets outperformed, that is the U.S. equity markets outperformed global markets, and pretty much it wasn't close no matter who you compare us to. Whether you're looking at the Chinese stock market, European stock market, doesn't matter. The U.S. market clearly outperformed. Another great point that he brought up in terms of the gas prices, this might kind of surprise some people, but the gas price in the United States, I've got some data for the end of May, gas prices for the United States at the end of May were actually lower than the global average. Some of the other gas prices around the world at the end of May, the U.S. average gas price was $4.79. If you look at some of the other countries, Australia was $5.50, China was $5.50, $6.50 in Canada. Over in Europe, pick your country, it's between $8 and $10 a gallon. So the places where it's where it was cheaper is pretty much where you would expect it to be cheaper: Saudi Arabia and Russia, major producers and exporters of oil. So I think those are two great points that the caller brought up.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Melanie next in Middleton. Melanie, hello.
Hello there.
What did you want to bring up, Melanie?
Sure. I think that one thing that's being overlooked is wages. Wages are not keeping up throughout the economy, generally speaking, to inflation. And there's a lot of profiteering I've been reading by major corporations. They're increasing their prices massively, but it's profiteering. It's not necessarily the supply chain or shortages or anything like that. It's just plain old profiteering.
Melanie, thanks for the call. Two big points there. I want to make sure Kevin has time to get to those. Thanks for calling in, Melanie. First of all, wages, we hear about the tight labor market. For some people, Kevin, driving wages up. Melanie worried not fast enough to keep up with costs.
Well, that's definitely true. Wages are up, but real wages, that is after you back out the cost of inflation, for most people, real wages have not kept up. So yes, that is an issue. And I think that's, you know, the Federal Reserve, part of what their actions are trying to do today is to try to bring inflation more in line with wage increases. And that has not been happening recently. Melanie is absolutely right.
And then Melanie saying, well, yeah, maybe inflation, maybe supply chain. She's also worried that companies are taking advantage of our expectation of high prices. to give us high prices?
Yeah, there's a number of things that kind of play into it. I mean, last year you basically had record corporate profits, and you had record corporate profits no matter how you measure it, whether you're looking at absolute dollars or whether you're looking at profit margins. In addition to that, as we've kind of talked about gas prices, stock prices typically reflect expectations of future profitability for corporations. And if you look at the S&P 500, that's pretty much been down or pretty much down about 20%, not taking into account what happened today, but it's down roughly about 20%. If you look at oil company stocks have absolutely pretty much exploded. Marathon, Valero, Phillips, Exxon Mobil are up 50% year to date, and that's with the overall market being down 20%. So despite the fact, you know, gas prices are high and Americans are, you know, a lot of Americans are struggling just going to the pump, there's no doubt profits have been quite good for corporations.
Melanie, thanks for that call. Mike joins us next in Spring Green. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. Yeah, financial advisors tell us that we should have a balanced portfolio of stocks and bonds. I guess under the assumption that when stocks go down, bonds go up. And they also advise us as we get older that we should be moving out of equities and into bonds. Are we seeing that in this current situation?
Mike, thanks. Kevin, do we know what bonds are doing as stocks have been dipping?
Okay, well, you've got to be a little bit careful mm-hmm. when you're just looking at bonds, because when interest rates go up, bond prices will go down. So it's sort of like when interest rates go up, you can get nicked on your portfolio, both through stocks and your bond holdings. This is really kind of a pretty complex subject. There's more interest rate sensitivity on long-term bonds than what there is on short-term bonds. There are inflation-protected bonds. There's also inflation-protected savings bonds. If you bought an I bond right now, it's paying about 9.6%. That is an I savings bond. So there are sort of ways that you can do this. But just strictly speaking, if you look at corporate bond pricing and the equity markets, when interest rates go up, you can kind of get nicked on both.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mike. Kevin, big picture. You mentioned gas prices up globally, looking at inflation by country, they're up in most, inflation's up in most of the world. How much control do we have in the United States about these things, which at least in part are global issues?
That is a great question, Rob. And I think that's one thing that's not really talked about enough. And that is, okay, yes, the Federal Reserve can control consumer demand in the United States, but gas prices are high around the world. Inflation is pretty much high around the world. Inflation varies, pick your European country, it varies between about 6 and 20%. Canada's got record high or 30-year high in inflation. They're up around 7%. Inflation is high in Australia. So you've got global factors that have impacted prices and inflation, and those global factors are pretty much its energy prices and its supply chain issues. And that's the type of thing I think you have limited control over. I think right now, quite frankly, oil companies are in a pretty good position, really almost politically, to try to get what they would like to get. I mean, right now, gas prices are extremely high. They can make a lot of profit. And if there's any type of encouragement to try to get oil companies to drill more, they're kind of in a political position to try to get as attractive position as they can to drill more, despite the potential pushback on using more fossil fuels down the road. I mean, what you have here is basically a problem that needs to be solved long term, but you need to do something short term to deal with the problem you got.
Kevin, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thank you very much, Rob. Been a pleasure. Thanks, callers.
Sure. That's Kevin Barr, Chief Analyst, Business Area Coordinator, and Professor with the Center for Business and Economic Insight at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point's School of Business and Economics. He talked to us today about the Federal Reserve hiking the interest rates and Monday's stock market drop. Coming up tomorrow here on the Ideas Network, the U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol plans a hearing tomorrow. Join us on the Ideas Network or at WPR.org for live NPR coverage that starts at noon. It's one of half a dozen planned public hearings that include witness testimony and evidence surrounding the riot and the lead up to it. Looking back at January 6th of 2021, when supporters of then President Trump stormed the Capitol building in an attempt to halt the certification of the 2020 election. That's NPR special coverage of the January 6th hearings tomorrow at noon here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Social media gets a bad rap sometimes, and maybe for good reasons, but sometimes it gets things just right. Like last night when I looked online for something and I saw a new post from someone in my neighborhood that said, go outside and look at the moon right now. And then I did, and I was really glad because I'd forgotten that this week is the strawberry supermoon. The strawberry part comes from it being strawberry season in a lot of the world, so the moon did not look red like a strawberry. To be clear on that. The supermoon part is because the moon is full at the closest point of its orbit to Earth. So the moon looks a little extra big, and if you catch it close to the horizon like I did, a trick of human perception makes it look really big. It peaked this morning. You should still be able to catch it tonight, weather permitting, which it looks like it might not. The supermoon ends when the moon sets early tomorrow morning. If you miss it, there are a lot of great pictures from around the world posted online, and we're in the works for another supermoon next month. Space and social media news you can use. This is Central Time.